From the bizarre world of the paranormal to the sinister secrets of the U.S. government, the Black Vault has become known worldwide as the premier spot for anything and everything conspiracy. Now, join me, John Greenwald Jr., as we dive into the research together in hopes to decipher these mysteries. This is the Black Vault Radio. That's right, this is the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald Jr. Thank you so much for making the Black Vault Radio your podcast of choice. Wanted to welcome you all to the program. We've got a special guest, John Nowinski, owner, operator, creator of the Smoking Gun Research Agency, or SGRA, as it is more commonly known. If you're not familiar with John or the Smoking Gun Research Agency yet, definitely log on to www.sgra-media.org. Learn all about the organization and John. He'll be joining me in just a couple of minutes here on the Black Vault Radio. But first, a couple of announcements. Like I mentioned on the last show, the Black Vault Radio Network, or BVRN, the main network that carries this program here and now many, many other programs, more than two at the recording of this, actually, more than 250 hours worth of podcasts and talk radio shows to download at www.blackvaultradio.com. Again, www.blackvaultradio.com. Tons of stuff, actually, that you have to check out. If you've missed any of the past shows here on the Black Vault Radio, if you're listening on the Paranormal Radio Network, or if you're listening on the Anomaly Radio Network, or Radio Metal Storm back east here in the great United States, if you are listening on any of those venues and you have not heard this show before, or if you're interested in hearing more of it, you can check it out, blackvaultradio.com. There's 37, 38 hours of this show available to download as we speak, but also radio shows such as Binal of America, The Blue Rose Report, Crossroads Paranormal, Live from Roswell, Paranormal Radio with Captain Jack, Shadows in the Dark, Through the Keyhole with Karen Dolan, Karen, my last guest here on the Black Vault Radio, even a United States military podcast on military history. It's the National Museum of the United States Air Force. It's a lecture series for those of you interested in military history. And again, this isn't just paranormal stuff. There's going to be not only this military history podcast, but many other types of programs available. Paranormal was just the first one to come online on the Black Vault Radio Network, or BVRN. Again, blackvaultradio.com. Download any of these 250-plus hours. But also coming your way, political podcasts. For those of you who got mad at me for supporting John McCain or announcing my support, which, by the way, I said that I'd give updates. I think it's absolutely fascinating that McCain picked Sarah Palin as his vice president choice. I think it was absolutely brilliant. I had to get this political comment in because I want those nasty letters again, of course. No. I just want your comments and feedback. Politics is a hot topic here on the Black Vault Radio Network. Highly controversial, because I get more letters on that in the brief mentions that I give it in the beginning of the show than anything else. Can you believe it? Which brings up another interesting point on blackvaultradio.com. You can get your voice heard on the air and also get your full message, because I won't edit it. I promise you, I give you my word that I will not edit any messages that come in. They may be played in a shorter form on the air because I don't have time to play everybody's message. But they will be available at blackvaultradio.com at the BVRN mailbag right here for the Black Vault Radio. And if you want to get your voice heard, please give me a call. That's what the number's for. Area code 641-715-3900. It's going to ask you for an extension. The extension is 21580. And then just give me your message. Talk to your heart's content. Tell me you agree with me. Tell me you think I'm an idiot. But keep it semi-clean so I can play it here on Black Vault Radio. John Nowinski of the Smoking Gun Research Agency coming up. Stay tuned.
And welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I am your host, John Greenwald, and I am joined with the owner, operator, and creator, I believe, of the Smoking Gun Research Agency, Mr. John Nowinski. John, thank you so much for joining me here on the Black Vault Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, and we had quite a wild ride to try and get you on here, so I appreciate your patience. I talked about it in the beginning of the show. My car had an unfortunate dead battery the other day when we were scheduled, and a 45-minute estimate turned into 4 hours, so thank you for your patience. Here we are a couple days after we planned to do it, but I appreciate your patience on that. And for those of you that are listening, John Nowinski, like I said, operates the Smoking Gun Research Agency. John, let me pass it back to you. Tell me a little bit about what this agency is and what do you do?
Well, the SGRA is an organization that's a little bit unique in that we investigate phenomena of all different types. So we're not just a UFO group or a government group. We kind of do the whole nine yards. We have experts in the fields of government cover-ups, ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, and basically strange mysteries. And we investigate that, and we report back via our website and via a monthly newsletter that we put out. So we really cover a lot here.
And for those of you listening on the blackvault.com or blackvaultradio.com, you can go ahead and surf while you're listening to this broadcast. And the Smoking Gun Research Agency, or SGRA, site is sgra-media.org. Do I have that right, John?
Yep, that's right.
sgra-media.org. Now, how often do you guys go out into the field and investigate whatever you investigate?
We actually go out fairly often. As far as our ghost investigations go, we've done about 4 to 6 investigations a month. So we're pretty busy with it. And, you know, we actually do go out with a lot of equipment. We go out with camera equipment. We go out with electronic phenomena to try to detect EMF fields. And we actually do that quite often. The UFO aspect of what we do is a little bit more of just interviewing witnesses and conducting some research. So there's not a lot of field work there. But we do the collection of the data, and then we try to pass that off to other organizations like MUFON that might be interested in actually doing field investigations.
Now, before we get into the UFO stuff, let me ask you about your ghost investigations, because we rarely talk about that here on the Black Vault Radio, and I absolutely love the topic. I'm going to be having a couple ghost investigators on in the coming weeks. But since I have you on and you do this, tell me a little bit about what a ghost hunter, so to say, does. What do you guys look for when you go out into the field, and what kind of places do you go to?
Well, it's very interesting that, you know, you call it ghost hunting because that's what most people know it as. But it's not really hunting anything. It's really going out there with scientific equipment and looking to see if we can actually find a reason for some of the phenomena that's out there. And sometimes we can, sometimes we can't. But it's using a lot of scientific equipment. As I said, we use a lot of camera equipment. We also use EMF detectors, which detect changes in the electromagnetic field. And these are all things that can affect people into actually having hallucinations without their knowledge of things. So we actually go out, we don't look to debunk things, but we don't look to believe every story we hear right off the bat.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this since 1997.
And you're a fairly young, I don't want to put you on the spot, but you're a pretty young guy, like myself, to be involved in this field, and I think you may even be younger than I am, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm 27.
27, you and I were matched. What month?
Yep.
What month are you?
February.
All right, I'm April. So anyway, I just wanted to put you on the spot there, because you are a young guy, you're out there doing this, and it's rare for people to really not only get involved as heavily as all of us are that are talking and probably listening, but to actually go out and do these investigations. What really got you involved to do this? Did you have an experience yourself, or were you just struck by curiosity?
Well, I did have a couple of experiences myself when I was younger, but what really got me involved was just the fact that mainly my mother was always very supportive of me looking into these odd things, and she never told me that I couldn't, so it was kind of a curiosity that grew into more of a hobby, And then the hobby grew into more of a job.
Right, right. Now, is this your job? Do you do SGRA research as your everyday living, or do you have another job that keeps you busy?
I don't have another job, but this is more of a full-time hobby for me. I have done some things with it that have actually paid the bills, things like writing reports for people and whatnot, and doing research that some people have called us on.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been a little bit of a lucrative business deal.
Well, good.
But it's not exactly a full-time job.
Well, I totally understand where you're going with that. Now, let me ask you, in your investigation, and sticking with the ghost thing, see, I know you do a lot of different types of investigations, but sticking with ghosts, is there one investigation that sticks out to you that is the, hey, if you don't believe in ghosts, you either have to go to this place or hear my story and look at the evidence? Do you have a story like that?
Well, there's been a lot of it. Actually, we have been pretty successful as far as the ghost investigations go with uncovering things that can't be explained by any of the scientific evidence that we use. So there's a lot out there that's unexplained, and I've heard a lot of stories from people. A lot of people have stories about ghosts that they're willing to share once they realize that you're not going to call them crazy.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a single episode goes, there really hasn't been one that's really stuck out. They've all kind of been a little bit unique to us.
Right. Well, let's pick a case or two if you could, and tell me a little bit, or walk me and the listeners through, what did you guys see or record or hear?
Sure. Well, one case that was very interesting was we had a couple who kept hearing footsteps on their second floor. And they asked us to come in and do an investigation, which we did. And it was actually quite interesting because we did get audio recording of what sounded like footsteps on the second floor. And when we were there about the third time, it was a little bit of a windy day out, and we ended up just going outside during one of the times that we heard the footsteps and realizing that there was a loose shutter on the side of the house.
Interesting.
And the loose shutter just happened to hit the side of the house exactly sounding like footsteps on the second floor.
So you were able to solve the riddle for the family.
Exactly. And that's a good example of, you know, something that wasn't exactly a ghost, but, you know, it's what we look for, too. So we don't just automatically assume that just because people are hearing footsteps that it is a ghost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what about a case that you have yet to explain or possibly can't be explained?
There's a number of them. We actually did an investigation of an inn, and the inn was supposedly haunted. There's been long stories about it, and we got a number of photographs there that just could not be explained at all. One of them actually seemed to show a figure in a window, and there was nobody else in the room. There was no light reflection or anything like that. So however it ended up being, it couldn't be explained.
Interesting. And what kind of history do you find with places with events that can't be explained? Do you kind of see a common thread throughout everything? Are they generally older places that were built on?
A lot of people think that ghosts would exist in older places like historical houses or whatnot. But the truth is that we get reports in and we get investigations in from newer homes just as much as we do from older homes.
So there's no common thread or anything. It's just
there really isn't. You know, a lot of times the older homes come with, you know, legend and lore to them, so that's kind of why most people associate it with that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing goes with cemeteries. A lot of people think that cemeteries would be haunted, but the truth is that we really find very rarely that cemeteries are haunted.
Interesting. See, I've told this story probably 2 years ago on Black Vault Radio, and I was at the Whaley House in San Diego, California. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
It's a
fairly famous place for being haunted. And we had experiences there that I'm telling you, I don't know what to believe with ghosts at all. But we had one of the supposed ghosts that lived in the house who was known as the Trickster. We had this long story given to us by one of the people that takes care of the houses or that was there as a tour guide, talking about this Trickster ghost, Yankee Jim. And he hides your keys and throws things off the shelves, and even in rare cases puts a red ring around your neck because his background story was that he was hung on this property, and he was so tall at the time. This was, I think, in the 1800s. He was so tall at the time that his feet hit the ground, that he was well above the average height of a man. And so this red ring is explained by that Yankee Jim wants to remind people that he, instead of his neck snapping, it actually, he strangled to death. And when I went there with my girlfriend and we heard this story, I wouldn't believe the story unless I was there and have photographic evidence of it. But after about 20 minutes of being in the house, or 30 minutes being in the house, not only did we hear and think we saw a lot of strange things, I turned around to look at her. There was nothing wrong with her. I turned around for a split second to look at something in her room because she really wanted to go. Turned back around, and she had this bright red ring all the way around her neck that appeared within seconds. It was the most amazing thing. And I'm telling you this story, and it goes on, and I don't want to waste the time because people are here to hear you. But this type of event where there's interaction with a person, if you want to call it that, or some kind of effect that a spirit is putting on to somebody else, do you have cases like that? How rare is that?
It's really not that rare. We do get cases quite often where something interacts with someone in a location. And, you know, a lot of times this is what gets people calling us into their houses because they have things interacting with them. They see things, hear things, or feel things. And it's all reports that we get in, and that's how people get in touch with us.
What kind of effects do you see? Does the SGRA go out and investigate? What kind of effects on a person do you see?
A lot of times on people, you know, it's really just amazement because a lot of people call us in after, you know, a lot of times people call us in after somebody in the house has reported something and, you know, they didn't quite believe it until they saw it for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the effect on people is really quite interesting.
Now, let's talk about video evidence or photographic evidence. You said you'd bring a lot of cameras to your investigation.
Yep.
What kind, if any, stuff do you catch on your photographic equipment?
We get a lot of what's called mists, and that's basically a white blurb that comes out in a photograph for no apparent reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like seeing your breath, but we get them inside houses, we get them outside. And it's almost like a spiritual mist. That's the most common thing.
Mm-hmm.
We also get a lot of orbs, which is a big debate over whether or not orbs are actually spirits or actually dust.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally, as I said, we've gotten actual photographs of spirits, or what we believe are spirits, as far as shapes go that look like people.
And so you do see facial definitions, because that actually was my next question.
Yeah, you can actually sometimes see very, very defined facial features.
Interesting. It's kind of scary in a way. I mean, are you scared to go out there sometimes to these places?
Well, not so much scared, just because I'm more intrigued by it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand where people would get scared from it, especially those who are living with it every day.
I think I would just be, after seeing what happened to my girlfriend from Yankee Jim down there in San Diego, I just would kind of be, I don't know, afraid. You're listening to the Black Vault Radio with John Nowinski, joining me from the Smoking Gun Research Agency. Visit him online while cool music is coming your way on the Black Vault Radio Network, sgra-media.org, sgra-media.org. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr. Joining me, John Nowinski from the Smoking Gun Research Agency. Hours flying by as we're talking about an aspect of the paranormal rarely talked about here on the Black Vault Radio, and I don't really know why. It just kind of happens because of the way the interviews unfold here, and I'm so excited to be talking about the ghostly phenomena of spirits and ghosts, and I'm not sure what other terminology I can use, John, but let me bring you back and say thank you so much for joining me. I wanted to ask you, as we're talking about all these ghost stories, I said it before the break, it is a little scary and kind of, you know, hooby-gooby type of stuff, but it really is a serious research field that you are involved in, and you're getting this evidence. Do you have a personal opinion about what you're catching on camera?
Well, I do believe that on camera we can catch the spirit of a dead person, of someone who has passed, who has simply not moved on. For whatever reason that might be, I do believe that people can capture that on film. And I think it's because that's simply an energy. And just like any energy, you know, film is mainly there to capture energy. That's what the photographs are. So I believe that film and video can actually capture the energy that's out there.
Now, why is that? I mean, is there something special about today's cameras versus old cameras, or has this kind of been captured on film with all sorts of different cameras, which shows that it's not the type of camera we're using? I mean, skeptics, I'm sure, will say, oh, well, the orbs are the way that a digital camera might take a picture, or this mist will be quite possibly a smudge on the camera lens, or. I mean, skeptics will always have a debate. Do you have a response to critics like that? I mean, what really is the tell-all that, hey, look, these objects are really there, we're capturing them on film, and you can't dispute it?
Yeah, it's actually interesting because it isn't just limited to one type of camera or one digital camera over a traditional film camera. The photographs have been showing up for years, and, you know, even way back to the first cameras, things were showing up on them. So as far as, you know, skeptics who like to try to limit things to categories, you can't really do that with a ghost photography because it really shows up on multiple types of cameras mm-hmm. and multiple types of equipment.
Now, one of the biggest arguments to some of the ghost pictures with facial features, where it did look like a person was standing there but was a ghostly image, was that it was a double exposure on the film, that there were two pictures kind of put together on one frame of film, and you kind of get that ghostly image. Now, today's cameras, or most of our cameras anyway, are using digital technology to where we're not using film, and I'm not trying to be a camera expert, nor do I pretend to even know that much about them, but we're not using film, and I think that double exposure argument can go away. Are you still, correct me if I'm wrong, first of all, but secondly, are you still seeing these facial features and characteristics of a spirit captured on a digital camera?
Yes, we are, actually. The digital cameras, you know, digital cameras of today are actually much more sophisticated, obviously, than the older cameras, and they do capture just as much, if not more. You know, a lot of people think about the computer technology that goes into the digital cameras, and sometimes that can actually help, and you get more from a digital camera than you would from a traditional camera mm-hmm. because the computer technology is there to filter out things that should be filtered out. So when you get something strange, it's even more interesting.
Now, can people download these photographs and videos that you've taken on your investigations?
They can actually go on to our website and view our gallery. And we have several photographs in the gallery from our investigations over the years.
Awesome. And again, for those who missed it, sgra-media.org. Definitely check out the Smoking Gun Research Agency. Download those photos. Do you have any opinion on the orb photos now, moving right along with the photographic evidence? You said there's a huge debate behind it. And for those of you who don't know, orbs are these balls that appear in photographs, and I'm guessing moving footage as well. Is that right, John?
Yeah, that is right. And there is a huge debate over it because people claim that a lot of it's dust and not actual spirit photography, but I think there's some debate over it, making it interesting when you only have one or two orbs in a photograph rather than, many. Mm-hmm. And when you have many, then it looks like it could be dust. But when you only get one or two, it makes you question it a little bit more.
Absolutely does. John Nowinski from the Smoking Gun Research Agency. Again, that website, in case you miss it, sgra-media.org. And you can link to it right from blackvaultradio.com, where some of you might be listening to this broadcast. Make sure you visit his website. Download some of those photos and videos from his investigations. Interesting and sometimes even scary stuff. Mr. John Nowinski coming right back on the Black Vault Radio. Stay tuned.
You're listening to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., joined with Mr. John Nowinski from the Smoking Gun Research Agency. Visit him online, sgra-media.org. John, been interesting and fascinating so far with your ghost investigations. I wanted you to just finalize the thought, though, on the orbs before we move on. So do you believe, I know I kind of asked you this before, but really kind of simple, do you believe that the orb entity on the photos are spirits?
I do believe that some of them are.
Awesome. Okay, that I just wanted to clear up because I know there's a huge debate, so I wanted to get that from you. And along with the ghost and paranormal investigations that you do, you not only do the spirit investigations, but you do unidentified flying objects or UFOs as well. Would you say that you do more UFO investigations than ghosts or vice versa?
It's actually about even. We really get a lot of both of them being reported to us. It's really about even with the UFOs and the ghosts. Depending on what time of the year it is, we get occasionally we get more ghost reports than we do anything else.
Now, let's talk about your UFO investigations. We've talked a lot about MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, in the past, and you said that you share your data with them, which I think is fantastic. Collaboration in this field is absolutely needed from agencies like MUFON and yourself. You're doing an excellent job out there. Let me ask you, what do you do in a UFO investigation?
Well, in a UFO investigation, we mainly do the documentation, which is talking to the witnesses and getting the eyewitness testimony down. As I said, we don't do too much of the field work, which we leave mainly to MUFON with the trained investigators in the field. So what we do is more of the documentation and the collection of the data, and keeping that in track so that if we get somebody that's reporting a particular UFO, we can look back into our database and see if we've ever gotten reports that are similar to that.
Now, do you see a lot of convincing evidence that sends John Nowinski over the edge saying, yes, I believe, or what are you seeing out there, or hearing, I should say?
Oh, well, I'm hearing and seeing a lot of convincing evidence. You know, a lot of these people who report the UFOs are, you know, completely normal people with, you know, completely average jobs, average lives. None of them are these crazy kooks that you hear about all the time on TV. And, you know, to me, that really makes it more interesting when you have the average person who really has no, you know, reason to make anything up, no scientific background to really try to create a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
And you get those people reporting these things, and, you know, they're reporting them because they honestly feel that, you know, they have something to report.
Now, you brought up an interesting point, the kooks that you don't see on, or that you see on television. You know, I'm a big advocate for saying that the media truly hurts this topic, the UFO topic, and that's both print and news. Now, not every news story, and again, print and television news, hurts the topic, but I would say a vast majority. Do you agree with that?
I would, yeah. I think that the media has really been pretty down on the downplaying on the whole phenomena aspect of UFOs. And, you know, of course, as you said, you occasionally get a good report in the news media or on TV. But generally, a lot of the shows that are out there are, you know, a little biased towards it. And a lot of the media reporting is the same thing.
It is the same thing. And that same thing is usually just a crack against people like yourself and myself and people who are really into this topic. And yet you have video evidence to back up what you're saying, photo evidence to back up what you're saying, a lot of field work backing up what you're saying and supporting your research, and yet they dismiss all of it. Do you think that will ever change?
I hope so. But, you know, I think it will. I think it's starting to... I see it starting to change a little bit, but it's going to be a very slow change.
Mm-hmm. Have you yourself had media? Well, I'm sure you have media publicity for the Smoking Gun Research Agency.
Yeah, we've had some pretty good publicity over the years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I live in a small town, so the small town papers have always covered things that we've done, and they've done so, you know, unbiased, and they've really been interested in the work that we've done.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think is behind this UFO topic that the media is covering and yet laughs at a lot? Do you truly believe that some or maybe even a majority of these are extraterrestrial in nature, or have you...
I really believe that some of them are extraterrestrial in nature. You know, I think it's arrogant to think that we're the only things out there in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to think that we're the most advanced is also a little crazy.
So, now let me ask you again, though. Do you think the majority of your cases are? I mean, do you think you're seeing evidence of an extraterrestrial in nature phenomena, or are you just collecting the data at this point and aren't sure?
I think that we are seeing a majority of them as being real sightings of real craft. You know, it's always a little bit hard to tell because, unfortunately, with UFO reports, there's never been a live UFO report.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's always after the fact. So it makes the research a little bit more difficult in that case.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that these people are seeing, you know, what they believe to be a UFO. And in many cases, I believe it's probably explainable. But I don't believe that every case can be explained away so easily.
You said you've interviewed a lot of reputable people that have seen and possibly even documented this UFO activity. Do you sense any fear in them to really kind of come out in the wide public eye and say, hey, look, I've seen this. This is real?
Some of them, yes. A lot of people are very hesitant to report what they've seen because they know how people react often to calling people kooks if they see something or,
mm-hmm.
you know, just trying to debunk people for no reason at all. And so a lot of people who report things to us, sometimes they don't want to give their name. Sometimes they don't want to give too much information. And, you know, a lot of times that's what we're seeing.
And what small town did you mention that you're in?
I'm in Westport, Connecticut.
Westport, Connecticut. How far do you travel with your investigations?
Pretty far, actually. We've gone out of state a number of times, into New Jersey, into New York and Massachusetts. So, and we've gone all across Connecticut.
And so people can contact you at any time for help for any type of paranormal or any type of paranormal activity, whatever that might encompass.
Yeah, and if we're unable to help because of distance or because of time, we have a very good network of people that we get in touch with. So we can always help people find someone.
Is this, if you don't mind me asking, is this something that you charge for? Or can people just write in? Or how does that work?
No, it's not. We've never actually charged for our investigations at all. I feel that it's a little bit difficult to charge for something that you may not be able to prove or disprove.
Mm-hmm.
So we've never charged for our investigations. We work strictly off of donations.
Fantastic. For those of you who are listening, if you've got something for John, or maybe just want to write in, visit him on the internet at www.sgra-media.org. You can surf while you're listening right there at blackvaultradio.com. Now, John, let me ask you, as we talked about briefly in the beginning of the show, you are a very young guy to be involved in this field, because this is a field of slightly older men and women, not old, but slightly older. And you're 27 years old, just like myself. And I see that you've got Nick Ressler on the SGRA staff, who's been a guest here on the Black Vault Radio, and also a topic of discussion because of his very cool gift that he gave me at MUFON. If you guys missed it, definitely go back a couple shows. I believe it was episode number 36 where I talked about that. But anyway, John, I wanted to ask you about youth in ufology and paranormal research. It is very much a rarity, and this is kind of a hot topic of debate in many ufological circles, if I could use that word. Why do you think that it is so rare that youths are not involved in the UFO/paranormal research?
Well, I think it takes a lot of work. I mean, that's one thing I've been experienced with, is the fact of how much work it actually takes to run an organization.
Mm-hmm.
And even just being involved in an organization as a young person, you know, it does take a lot of work and a lot of dedication. So a lot of young people have, you know, other things that they're keeping on their minds, other things that they're wanting to do. But I do think it's important that younger people get involved, because it's not something that, you know, the older generation isn't going to be around forever, and mm-hmm. somebody's going to need to take the torch soon.
And do you have fun? You obviously have fun with it. I don't even have to ask that. But you have a lot of fun with this.
Oh, yeah.
What is your greater goal? If somebody were curious about getting out there and investigating, I mean, what drives John Nowinski? What gets you out there to try and prove or disprove or just collect the data for this information? Because as you said, you may not be able to solve it. And that's kind of a frustrating thing for all of us, because we don't have the answer. And yet we still get out there, and it still drives us to get out there and collect the data, spend the money, spend the time, run organizations as you're doing, and really invest part of your life and your pocketbook into this. What drives you?
Well, what drives me is just the fact that even if 95% of the cases reported can be explained, it still leaves a little bit that can't be explained.
And, mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people say, well, that's not all that much, or that's not enough. But to somebody like me, that's all I need, is that little percentage that can't be explained to keep me going.
And you feel you have that?
I do. I feel that over the years, the data that we've collected has proven that beyond a reasonable doubt that these phenomena do exist and these things do exist. And I think that that's enough to keep me going, and it's certainly enough to keep the other people involved in our organization going.
Now, let me ask you, I asked you this about your ghost research and investigations. What with UFOs has stuck out to you, if anything, that there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that can't be disproved, and you got to say, hey, skeptics, look at this case? And it could be an SGRA investigation, or it could be outside. But is there something that sticks out to you that people should look at?
Well, what sticks out to me are things like the Hudson Valley sightings and the Phoenix Lights, where there were hundreds of eyewitnesses that reported things, and there were photographs, and there were sketches, and there were, you know, mounds and mounds of evidence that something was there. And you have, you know, all this evidence that there was something there and something going on, and it's unexplained, it remains unexplained. And I think that, to me, that's really what shouts out that there's something going on here that we need to know about.
That is an interesting point that we have yet to talk about, is these cases with not one, two, or three witnesses, but hundreds, and in some cases, thousands of people that are seeing this thing. And with that being said, you can discredit any of the skeptics' arguments that it's a hallucination or a misidentification of something, that if you've got that many people seeing something, there's something there. What it is, it doesn't mean it's extraterrestrial, but there's something there. Do you see in your cases where you've got lots of different witnesses like that, maybe just not one or two?
Yeah, we do. And the cases that interest me most are the cases where we have, you know, two or three different witnesses from different areas that all saw the same thing. We had an investigation that we did about 2 years ago where we had three separate witnesses from separate areas of a town that all witnessed the same object in the sky. And so that was really interesting because these three people never met, didn't know each other, didn't talk at all, didn't even talk during our investigation. Yet they all reported similar things.
Mm-hmm. And that's always a fun and interesting find, especially for the UFO field. I'm not sure if you know this. I run the Black Vault Encyclopedia Project, which actually archives a bunch of articles and case UFO case files and so on. And I've kind of joined hands in cyberspace, so to speak, with MUFON, and have been archiving a lot of their sightings, and actually came across something here in California where like 12 different people, which doesn't sound like a lot, but out of the people that saw a mysterious object in Orange County, California to report, which means there's probably 100 or 200 witnesses, because very rarely do people want to report it, let alone know how.
Right.
But all of these people who didn't know each other all went on to the MUFON site, and all from different parts of Orange County, California, which is a fairly large area, reported this UFO object. And there was an investigation done by MUFON. I wrote in and told them, I said, look, I'm seeing a huge jump of sightings on this one particular day. At this one particular time, everybody saw the same object, and they did this huge investigation. My point is that this collaboration between organizations like you're doing is absolutely critical. But on top of that, when you've got multiple witnesses to the same object, that's huge, although be it very rare. I guess rare. Would you consider it rare?
Yeah, I would consider it rare, but it does come up, you know, as you saw, it does come up on occasion.
Which is always an interesting find. Let me ask you, other than UFOs and ghosts, SGRA, what do they do? I mean, are you involved into any other aspects of the paranormal out there researching?
Well, we're involved in cryptozoology a lot. Which is the study of mysterious creatures. We do a lot of research into that, and we also do a lot of research into government cover-ups,
mm-hmm.
and things like government agencies and overpowerful government agencies, things like that.
That's always a fun topic. Now, let me get you back to cryptozoology, which is a fascinating topic, one I don't know much about. Tell me about some of those strange and mysterious creatures that you guys are out there looking for.
Well, we do have a lot of them that are actually here in Connecticut. There's been a lot of Native American legends and things like that about mysterious creatures here in Connecticut. But we also research the larger creatures that people know about, like Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster. And we keep track of the latest news and the latest information coming out from there. And, you know, it's really quite interesting because I do believe that these creatures exist. And it's only a matter of time before we actually get to see them.
Now, let's go back to Bigfoot. There's been some recent headlines about Bigfoot. And I fully admit I'm not in tune as much as I want to be on that. Can you update us on the most recent headlines? Are you familiar with what's going on?
Well, the most recent headlines was that someone supposedly found a dead carcass of a Bigfoot, but it turned out to be a hoax.
It was a hoax. Okay.
It was a hoax, and that was a big deal because the media actually picked up on that one and was running with it for a couple days.
Oh, of course, it's a hoax.
Yeah.
I mean, they love that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Now, is there any credible coverage or evidence of Bigfoot?
Well, there is. There's been a lot of credible coverage, and just like the UFO phenomenon, the ghost phenomenon, there's a lot of witnesses that have come forward and reported things who have had no reason to make up the stories, no reason to lie or to try to get anything out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's been very interesting.
Now, what about your investigations? What kind of stuff have you found? Have you found tracks or hair samples? Or
we have found some tracks, and here in Connecticut, we were actually out at one of the state parks doing an investigation and following up on some tracks that were discovered there. And, you know, it's really quite interesting because these things are turning up,
mm-hmm.
and something's making them, that's for sure.
Now, how big were the tracks? I mean, what made these so different from a human walking barefoot?
Well, the tracks were, first of all, they were in a highly wooded area, which would be really difficult for someone to walk with bare feet in it because it would hurt a
mm-hmm.
lot.
mm-hmm.
They were also quite large. They were about more than a foot larger than a regular human's foot.
Wow.
And, yeah, there were several of them. So
five toes or... Were there five toes?
There were five toes, I believe.
Interesting. We're talking Bigfoot with John Nowinski from the Smoking Gun Research Agency. Been a fascinating hour, which is zooming by way too quickly. But there's still more coming up right here on BVRN, the Black Vault Radio. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. We're finishing up with John Nowinski of the Smoking Gun Research Agency. We've talked about ghosts, we've talked about UFOs, and I had no idea we'd get on Bigfoot. Now, John, you saw some tracks out there in the wilderness that were, safe to say, convinced that they were not human tracks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, from all of we've seen, we were pretty convinced.
Very interesting. Now, you said five toes, and you said you saw multiple tracks. What do you do with evidence like that? I mean, when you hear it, you go, wow, that's fascinating. But then what? What does the investigator do?
Well, the best we can do is document it as best as possible. You know, we get down just like a CSI would in the field. You know, we get down with measurements. We get down as close as we can with photography and getting as good photographs as we can so we can document the whole entire area.
Mm-hmm. And do you have to coordinate with the national, you said it was a national park that you were at?
Yeah, we were there. We were at a state park.
Do you have to coordinate with the state and get permission to say, hey, we're out there looking for Bigfoot? Or
we didn't have to coordinate with them, but we did contact them to see if they had received any reports or anything like that, which is something we always do, you know, with UFO reports as well. We always contact the state agencies and see if they happen to have heard anything or seen anything or gotten any reports from anyone.
And what is their response to that?
Well, a lot of times they laugh it off, but sometimes they actually do come through with things, and mm-hmm. sometimes they have heard things or seen things, and sometimes you get the right person who's willing to talk about it.
Now, you know, there's always, and as with UFOs or ghosts, there's that preconceived notion, Bigfoot, that's not real, come on. And like you said, you get a lot of laughs along the way. But you bring up a couple people that do kind of either take it seriously or have some stuff to report. What kind of stuff do you hear? I mean, do state officials take that seriously, or do some of them, do you find that?
Well, some of them do, and, you know, some of them do have their own stories, and they're willing to share. You know, it's always a matter of who you get and who you can find.
And what kind of stories do you hear? Sightings or just, hey, I knew a guy who saw something?
Mostly sightings. Sometimes it's, you know, they happen to hear a story that somebody had seen something and they're willing to pass that story along.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, other than Bigfoot, what kind of stuff do you investigate over there in Connecticut or outside of the walls of Connecticut?
Well, you know, we mainly do the same things. You know, there's been some lake monsters supposedly sighted here and things like that. So we stick close to those stories.
Interesting. Well, really fascinating stuff, John. For those of you who have missed the website, www.sgra-media.org. John, is there any other contact method that you want to put out there for people to contact you, or is the website the best way?
The website's really the best way. They can also contact us by email at sgra@sgramedia.org.
And there's a dash in there between the
yeah.
SGRA. Okay, sgra@sgra-media.org. Email John or visit him online, www.sgra-media.org. John, it's been an absolute fascinating hour. You know, we've got to have you on again and we'll talk more about your cryptozoology research. And please, by all means, at any time, give me a call. Give me an update on what you guys are doing.
Yep, sounds good.
Great. And thank you all for listening to the Black Vault Radio Network. Check out more podcasts of my show, Black Vault Radio, with myself on www.blackvaultradio.com. And for those of you who have missed it, there are hundreds of hours of other podcasts and radio shows now available that are broadcast on BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss it, because there's lots of good stuff to download and listen to. And again, www.blackvaultradio.com. My special thanks to John Nowinski from the Smoking Gun Research Agency. John, thanks again for joining me.
Glad to be here.
And thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time right here on the Black Vault Radio.